In the home of the Angels, Mike Trout, Andrew Heaney carrying out Tyler Skaggs' framed jersey. This is ground ball to second base. Brent Hefel falls down, picks it up, fires to first. The Angels have no hit the Seattle Mariners.
On a night where the Angels honored Tyler Skaggs, every single Angel player wearing his number and name on the back of their uniforms, a no-hitter tonight.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell.
That pound for pound, he is the best in the world today. Ladies and gentlemen, from Norfolk, Virginia, presenting the former undisputed lightweight champion, the former junior welterweight champion, and the current WBC welterweight champion of the world, Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker.
It's the Mac Attack.
115-115, a draw. The decision is a majority decision, a draw.
A draw, and you can see the reaction of Sweet Pea Whitaker. He can't believe it, and frankly, I can't either.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan Big Mac McKinnell on 920 The Game.
Yeah, what's up, Las Vegas? Welcome in here on this Monday. Heard it right there in the open, courtesy of Nick Nice. Bit of a happy show, somber show, somber and happy. Both, like...
Yeah, I'm not really a fan of these type intros, but...
Well...
I mean, he kind of had to. It's such...
Yeah.
I mean, we're paying tribute to the Angels, who are paying tribute to their fallen soldier, and then we're also paying tribute to one of the greatest boxers of all time, who sadly passed away at the age of 55.
Yeah, which... Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker, which I'm sure, Nick, as you know, talk about this city, Las Vegas, fight capital USA, fight capital of the world, a lot of people out there familiar with Sweet Pea Pernell Whitaker. And to kind of commemorate that, to discuss what Pernell Whitaker meant to this sport, because I think for a lot of people out there, like, I'll give you an example. I searched a GIF to share on the rundown today when I was putting out the Twitter, the subjects we'd be hitting on. And I searched Sweet Pea, I searched Pernell Whitaker, I searched nothing. Not one single GIF of the man exists. Now, it's not the be-all, end-all. Almost all boxing fans know Pernell Whitaker. My point is, right, is the next generation. You go ahead and you search a GIF of Mike Tyson, you're going to come up with like 30,000 different results. You know what I mean? You go type in a GIF of Anthony Joshua or Andre, you're going to get returns out of all of those. But Pernell Whitaker... Maybe
a dot GIF.
Yeah, and
a
also, well, there you go. And another thing
about... I just
about,
want to make sure what we're all saying here. Because at first, like, they said GIF. I'm like, wait,
no, GIF.
Yeah, GIF.
G-I-F.
A loop, a video loop.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty sad when sometimes you search something and you're like, really?
There's no GIF for this? There's no one remembering Sweet Pea in GIF form? And there wasn't.
He was the original defensive boxer. Not original.
Well, no. There was, you know...
There was plenty.
And there were others. But he was one, too, in an era where... Star power was something, and marketing was something, and, you know, he was an Olympic gold medalist in 84, and then he went on to have his, you know, the heyday of his career in the late 80s and the early 90s, coincidentally running alongside Mike Tyson, right? So it was a hyper version of boxing. It was star power. It was this and that. Pernell definitely had the star power for his era, but it was one of those things, I think, on some level that hindered him, was he was a defensive fighter. He was Floyd Mayweather before Floyd Mayweather.
That's what I was about to say.
And he wasn't, I don't want to say smart enough, but he wasn't in the era. He wasn't able to make the reality TV show superstar that Floyd was able to concoct and bring to the mainstream almost 20 years later with the advent of the HBO 24/7 series in around 2007. That's when Floyd really became Money Mayweather, courtesy of Oscar De La Hoya, a man who met Pernell Sweet Pea Whitaker in the 90s and was part of, listen, Pernell Whitaker lost 4 times in his career, but he really only lost twice. And those were towards the end of his career. When his skills were declining, at the hands of Felix Tito Trinidad, who was a monster, and he fought him like literally in his prime. Trinidad was arguably no more dangerous than when he fought Sweet Pea Whitaker, right? But prior to that, Sweet Pea had 2 monumental fights. He was undefeated when he went in against Julio Cesar Chavez, walked out with a majority draw. It was absolutely a win for Sweet Pea Whitaker. And then he would go on to fight Oscar De La Hoya in another controversial fight, a fight that I definitely think Sweet Pea won, went to Oscar De La Hoya. Not as controversial in my mind as the Julio Cesar Chavez majority draw. So you when you're talking about Sweepy Whitaker, he really only lost twice, and then he had those wins, in my opinion, over Chavez and over De La Hoya. Truly one of the greatest boxers of his generation. So talking about that, we're going to continue the Sweet Pea conversation coming up in about 15 minutes. I'm going to be joined by my buddy Danny Acosta of USA Today, ESPN. He used to be my co-host on Sirius. He is a huge boxing follower, scribe, as well as a fan. And during that era, he was a huge Cesar Chavez fan. And he was a Sweet Pea Whitaker fan. So we're going to catch up with Danny. What did Sweet Pea mean to boxing? What did he mean to him? And also, we got some news and notes across the MMA world. As Uriah Faber returned to the cage last night, remember, California kid, not last night, Saturday, excuse me, in devastating fashion. Really excited for Uriah Faber. We'll talk to him about that as well, Danny Acosta. But before we get to the opening round, Nick, in what was a very, very special night for baseball on Friday night, which I was really glad I got to watch. Before we get to that, I should talk about the real event over the weekend, and that was our Summer League, which was we're hoping will be a regular annual thing, our Summer League party down at GameWorks over there off of Town Square on Saturday night. It was a great function.
Yeah, whoever didn't show up, they missed Michael Jordan and Shaq, and Kobe was out there, and Michael Jackson. No, I'm kidding. No, they didn't show up, but we had a great time.
Absolutely.
It was a great time.
Well, I'll tell you what. I went 5-0 in NHL.
Yeah, so apparently you are maybe not the real deal Holyfield.
No, but I will probably beat your ass in NHL.
But well, I didn't get on the sticks.
You did have blood represented. Your oldest son Paul.
I did bring my 15-year-old.
Yeah, he did take a stab at me. He lost, I believe, 7 or 6-2, but he made it you know what? He's not bad. He's not bad.
Yeah. He's 15, so.
Yeah, he's very cocky.
I know, and that's I had to lay into him last night. Oh yeah, we had a fun father-son moment last night. Let him know.
Well, I beat him down on Saturday, and you gave him the verbal beat down last night. So maybe a humbling weekend for young Paul Otomo. Maybe not. But others, there were four others that stopped by. I'll tell you who gave me the toughest drawing. For those of you that missed that, right? We're going to be doing more of these. If you think you got NHL game, now listen, we can expand it. We can get into the show because I'm pretty good at MLB the show as well. I'm a Diamond Dynasty player. I'm about 40 wins over 500 right now. I'm thinking like 140 and 100 is my online record, which is good. Anyone who plays that, I mean, it's not. I'm sure there's people in Vegas that could probably beat me at the show. I'm not sure if there's anyone that can beat me in NHL. I'm trying to be fair about my skills. Like Madden, I played Salerno, Greg Salerno from Comp over at Madden. I think I lost by 10. That's his game, though. And I will say this.
Salerno's a Madden, huh?
Well, I will say this, though.
Yeah.
I didn't do it with updated rosters. And he had the 95 overall Philadelphia Eagles. And who did I bring? I brought like the 81 overall Chicago Bears. Minus no Khalil Mack, no upgraded Roquan Smith, no upgraded Kyle Fuller or Eddie Jackson. And I still, it was a 10-point game, and it was tied into the third. So that was his game. So I think with a little more practice, I think I could take down Greg as well.
How many minutes were the quarters?
We only did 4 minutes.
4 minutes. That's respectable.
Yeah, you know, we had to get to other people on the sticks. But I will say this, as we talk about, getting into other games. I went 5-0, but I almost lost. A colleague of my wife's and a guy who's a big Knights fan, Jordan. What's up, Jordan? His name's actually Jordan Michael, not Michael. It's actually his name.
That is awesome.
I know. You always want to mess it up. You know, say, anyway, he came down. He only lost to me by 2 goals. And we were only separated by a goal going into the third period. And he's an Xbox player, and we were playing on PlayStation. And he was playing the away side, which means he had the unadvantageous honor of shooting down twice.
And you don't like that.
No, it messes up your whole. Trust me, it's huge. I don't want to get too video gamey. Don't want to take
What you're talking about.
Yeah, it's a deep dive, but it is a huge advantage. So I would venture to say, Jordan, you are a true competitor. If we were playing on Xbox and he had the advantage with shooting, I think that Sugar Ray Leonard signed boxing glove would have went to Jordan Michael.
Now I feel like I missed out. I should have gotten down on some Madden and some hockey.
You were out playing like air hockey and doing other stuff with your wife.
Yeah, I was.
You had your chance.
I was taking my little ones around, but even playing Tyler Bischoff at some FIFA. Wanted to play some FIFA.
There was that going on. I lost to the Markness. I lost 1-0, but he did score in the very last, in the 92nd minute. So it was technically 2-0.
Mark Moore.
But I essentially had given up by that point. My point is even the games that weren't mine, FIFA and Madden, I only lost by a goal or a touchdown.
So you're an all-around gamer. You're a jack of all.
I feel like there's something to be said for that. I feel with a little bit of practice, I feel like I could beat everyone in the building at every game.
Considering we had comp out there, we should have had one set up with like Tony Hawk or something.
I would have beat him at that.
I'm just saying, we should have had Tony Hawk set up. My wife would have definitely gotten down on the sticks then.
Man, what a great game Tony Hawk was. That, you know what? They had some good skateboarding games for PlayStation 3, Skate being the one of them. They need to bring back. They need to make a good skate game.
My kids actually still play. It's not like the original Tony Hawk, but I forget which Tony Hawk version it is. But they still love Tony Hawk on the 360.
Oh, yeah. See, they need to do. Listen, we're going to get to the opening round here in like 2 minutes, 1 minute even. I just do want to say this. They need good games for skateboarding and snowboarding on the next console because I feel like all those games have like been put on a phone. They're like, we'll just put it on a phone release and kids can...
Yeah, you can. Actually, my kid has a flip game. A skateboard flip kick, whatever, with your fingers. There's
true
no
skate.
Guy. Yeah,
true
whatever.
Skate, yeah.
You
no,
just
I,
do with
I,
your fingers.
I play the same game as your child.
Okay.
Because I am, in fact, a giant child. Let's do it. It's time for the opening round.
It's the opening round.
Finish him.
Brought to you by VIP Collision.
Your wife says you still have those flip. What are those fingerboards?
Fingerboards. I do.
Yeah.
Shout out Tech Decks.
Yeah. My middle son loves those right now. That's the thing for him right now.
See, that's why your children like me because I'm essentially a 12-year-old.
You're a big giant boy.
Yeah, yes, 100% true. Harry.
You're
I'm a
hairy,
very hairy
bearded boy who can buy beer.
I feel like I feel like if I was a pro wrestler, Harry Boy would be my. But it would be like HARRYBOYE or something like that.
BOI?
Yeah,
boy?
I'd be real creative with it. Harry Boy.
Coming into the 12-year-old's ring. He has a beard of a 40-year-old.
Do you know how much class I missed and how just fingerboarding, how much my teachers hated me? I would set up my books and I'd be doing like tailspins and shove it out. And yeah, no, I'm completely worthless. And trust me, kids, it doesn't always work out like this. Like, I don't know how I ended up where I'm at with an actual job and not homeless. You know what I mean? Like, diving through dumpsters. It should have been that way. Really. Tech decking through science class and math?
I'll probably offend somebody right now, but you have a sign, you know, for the homeless that says, I'm here because I was too busy tech decking in school.
But I will kick your ass in a game of horse on the fingerboards.
All right. Sorry. I took you all off here.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I actually want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Do you ever run into people that don't like sports?
Mm.
That are just like, I don't understand how you can watch that in like NFL and just those people on Sunday that are out like, I'm not dogging them. I'm just saying, you know, I'm going to go fishing or I'm going to do this or I don't see the appeal of watching other people do things.
I think you've sort of one here person at the station, a remote tech. I don't want to say names,
yeah,
but I think this person likes sports, but ultimately could care less about watching it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're around. We all know one or two. There's someone in the video department's the same way. Calls it sports ball. Kind of makes jokes about it.
I know who you're talking about.
Has no interest in sports. And
yes.
Again, that's fine. But I do question.
Sports ball.
I do question how you can see something that we saw on Friday night and not be a sports fan. And I am, of course, talking about the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. Los Angeles Angels. The Angels throwing a combined no-hitter on Tyler Skaggs Day. Now, I think most of us know the story, essentially. Tyler Skaggs, young Angels pitcher, 28 years old, would have been 28. Passed away a few weeks ago. The Angels went on a road trip, so they didn't have any time to properly memorialize Tyler. So they were back at home on Friday night. And inexplicably, the Angels went out and threw a combined no-hitter. Now, that in itself would be incredible if that was just the story. But it's not. There's so much more to the story. First of all, let's start with how the game started off. Tyler Skaggs' mom went out onto the mound to throw the first pitch. Now, mind you, every single player on the Anaheim Angels is wearing Los Angeles Angels. I know there's Angels fans out there that I'm sorry. It's like the San Diego Chargers. There's some things I can't get past, right? I'd probably still call them the California Angels. Shout out Tim Salmon.
I have a little bit of audio, I think, here.
From the first pitch?
Joining us on the field today,
nice. Terry.
We welcome Tyler's mom, Debbie, brother, Garrett, stepdad, Dan,
and wife, Carly.
Emotions high, obviously.
Tyler's mom, Debbie, will be tossing an honorary first pitch to Tyler's teammate and good friend, Andrew Heaney.
She
Taylor Cole, this will be-
drilled
Oh,
that
I know.
Pitch.
She did. I saw that. She was stone cold about it.
Stone cold. There was no, from my recollection, she walks up, she takes the ball from the player.
Winds up.
But she kind of drops her head for a second, maybe says something real quickly, then winds up, like perfect wind up, and delivers not a heater, but a straight rope all the way to the, from the mound.
It was a strike.
From the mound.
Yes.
A strike. And that was incredible. So I was kind of following along on social media. I didn't watch the whole game until the eighth inning, but I saw that, right? Incredible. The day that you're memorializing your dead son, not even a full 2 weeks after he had passed away, you have the fortitude to go out and do something like that. The steadfastness, the leadership, I don't know what you call it, the love of a mother. It was incredible. It was incredible.
Again, hold it togetherness.
Right, all that, right? So I would say to people who don't like sports, what are you doing? Take it a step further. Mike Trout's first at-bat, leader of the Anaheim Angels, leader of the Los Angeles Angels. Mike Trout's first at-bat, first pitch, wearing number 45, because, again, everyone was wearing Tyler Skaggs's 45. Trout goes out and hits a home run off the first pitch he sees. What?
How far was it?
454 feet. 454. They're all wearing his number 45. He hits it 454 feet. It's incredible, right? So then that happens. Now I see that come down my timeline, and I'm blown away. Then I get word around the eighth inning that they're going for the no-hitter, and I can't believe. So I tune in, and they get it, and it's incredible. And what follows is incredible. There's the emotions, there's the hugs, there's I think the fans are sitting around trying to compartmentalize what they just saw. I mean, to do something like that on a night like that is just as improbable as it comes. Then, just to add to the optics and the visuals of it all, every single one of the teammates, I think behind Mike Trout's leadership, take off their 45 jerseys and lay them across the mound, which is just, I mean, there's pictures of it. If you haven't seen it, just go ahead and Google it. It's incredible. But here is where things get really creepy in a very good way. Because I'll go back to those fans not liking sports in a second. These are all tweets from our pal Arash Markazi from the Los Angeles Times, formerly ESPN. At the post-game press conference, Mike Trout pointed out something to us because there are some numbers. We talked about the first home run he hit, right, being 454 feet, 4-5. Skaggs' number being 45. It gets a little crazier than that. Skaggs' birthday was the next day, okay? So they pitched the no-hitter on the 12th. His birthday is the 13th. He would have been 28. They scored 7 runs in the first inning, finishing the game with 13. 7-13. The date of his birthday, the date after this no-hitter. It continues. There's the number that you pointed out. Mike Trout hitting the 454-foot home run. Oh, how about this? What's 4 plus 5 plus 4?
13.
Wow.
Look at me. I actually did math pretty good on that one.
7-13. He was born on the 13th of July. 454, the distance of Mike Trout's home run. 454 equals 13, the day he was born.
Dude, this is like one of those psychic peoples that they use the numbers to tell you your future and stuff like that.
Well, might be something to that.
Yeah.
The Angels finished the game facing 28 batters, which is tends what to happen if you're doing a no-hitter.
Yep.
Now,
he was going to be 28.
But there is walks, and it wasn't a perfect game, so it may not. But this was. This was a 28-batter no-hitter. Tyler Skaggs would have been 28 on the 13th, the day after the no-hitter. There's more. The last no-hitter, a combined no-hitter.
Yeah, this is probably the coolest one.
Right. The last combined no-hitter in California history came in 1991 on July 13th. Tyler Skaggs' birthday.
Not just the day he was born, but the actual day he was born in 1991.
The actual day.
Not just
his birthday.
Not just his birthday, but his actual birth date.
Now, there's probably somewhere missing in there because you just sit down and you start getting into this numbers and symmetry in the world and the way it works. I just want to say this. What I watched on Friday night was one of the most incredible things that I've ever seen in my life. Damn sports. I'm talking the improbability of it all. I'm talking about the story behind it. And listen, I talk about snowboarding and skateboarding. I'm an individual team guy. It's why I was so drawn to mixed martial arts. Individual team, that makes no sense. Individual sport,
I was going to say
thank
something.
I was going. I appreciate you not. I'm glad I caught it because there are probably, you know, more than a few people out there like, wait, what? No, I'm more of an individual sport guy.
Yeah.
So I very much, it's why I covered MMA for as long as I do and still do, as long as I did, and I still do. I very much love skateboarding and snowboarding growing up, right? But this right here is what makes team sports great. A story last year like the Golden Knights, right? Well, 2 years ago now, since we're heading into our third season, right? The improbability of that run, a team bonding together with a city, multiple individuals with multiple beliefs in the world and personalities and all those things, right? Put together to make something special for everyone, right? That's what makes sports great, the improbability. What we saw on Friday night, a team bonding together to put through an effort where you end up with a combined no-hitter, with the emotions of that. Watch, can you imagine being an Angel and watching Tyler Skaggs' mom go out on that mound? And Trout talked about it after the game, and he said essentially that, you know, emotions are running high because we had to watch the pregame video package. We had to, you know,
yeah. And
it brought up all these emotions. And imagine that.
No.
Imagine watching all that. Then imagine watching the mother of your teammate who, by all accounts, by everyone in Anaheim and in Los Angeles, loved this man. Tyler Skaggs was beloved, so you know that on some level they knew his mom. To watch her go out and pull that off and then to put a no-hitter behind that with the numbers and everything that we just broke down, are you kidding me? You're not a fan of sports? You're not a fan of that? I'm not saying you have to watch every time. I'm not saying you have to get the Major League Baseball at-bat package and watch every single game or even have a team. But to not appreciate how great sports can be, but yet you'll go watch reality TV, whatever it will be, right? Movies or whatever. This is the best reality TV that could ever exist because it defies numbers, it defies logic, it defies anything that you could actually write. Even Mike Trout said it after the game. He's like, you couldn't write this because they would send it back and say, make it more realistic. This is too unbelievable. And it is. It is unbelievable by every sense of the word. I will never forget it. And here's the other thing. If you're a team looking to immortalize this guy that you love so much, can you, and this is going to sound horrible, but I'm hopefully setting it up and prefacing right. I was talking to Cofield about this on Friday night. We got together, had a late night dinner. We were talking about this happening, this no-hitter, right? And I brought up, I believe his name was Darren Kyle. It might be Derek Kyle, but that's kind of the point that I'm making. He was a pitcher in, I believe, the early 2000s that passed away, or maybe the late 90s. I don't even remember. He was a Cardinal, I believe. And I'm not trying to, you know, dump on his memory. That's not the point. It was a terrible time when it happened. I remember it racked the organization, and on some level, I still remember the patches and all those things happening. And we've seen it as well with Jose Fernandez a couple years down in Miami, Roy Halladay, right? Horrible things. And this is not a knock to Skaggs or Kyle or anything like that, but they're not Halladay and they're not Fernandez. They had the Cy Youngs. They had the All-Stars to back them up. Skaggs, again, this is going to sound terrible, but it's not. He would have been largely forgotten. He would have been another Daryl Kyle. It would have been like, who was that Angels pitcher that, you know, that died and we never really found out what it was and was all this question? Whatever it may be, right? The Anaheim Angels, the Los Angeles Angels, the Angels put that man on their backs and immortalized him in a way that you, by all accounts, this man was beloved. And you took this beloved man, this beloved teammate who didn't have that legacy behind him and you gave him one. No one will ever forget, especially if you're a baseball fan, right? I'm a baseball fan. I won't be questioning, when did Darryl Kyle die? When was it? I will not be doing that with Tyler Skaggs because I will remember in a way that I could never possibly forget because his team went out there on that night, on the night that they were memorializing him and threw a combined no-hitter with the numbers behind it. It was just a beautiful moment. And it once again, and because I have this with sports. I've had it throughout my life. Ups and downs with different sports and different loves and passions, and you fall in and out of love with certain sports or certain, you know, I'm just saying. Like, I'll give you an example. When I went off to college in 2002 to 2004 or 5, I was so focused on college and doing the things that I needed to do that I mean, I watch football every Saturday, college football every Saturday, NFL every Sunday. That was a given. But as far as like hockey, basketball, and baseball was a little bit easier because of the summer, right? It was a little easier to follow along. But they took a little bit of a back seat, right? This is one of those things that kind of reaffirms your love for sports. I don't know how you can be a sports fan and miss this story, or be a sports fan and hear about this story and not be in as much wonderment as you and I are. Because that was as good as it gets, man.
Oh, like you said, the story itself is so Hollywood. The script would have been sent back, like you said, because it's just like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
How many numbers can you make this? Like, really? It's the day of his birthday, right? and all this. You know what? The sad thing about death, and you brought it up, is just like some people have passed, and we forget about them.
Yeah, 100%.
And having lost my parents, that's the thing that I want people to remember. It's not to feel sorry for me. It's just to remember the life that they had and who they were.
Sure.
So for them to, like you said, to go out and to be able to, you know, like, hey, guys, we're going to have a service. We're going to have a funeral. We're going to have a remembrance, you know, of this man's life.
Right.
But no, we're going to go out and have like one of the best performances, not just as a team. A team combined effort from the start, from the beginning, the home run, all the way until the end with the third out.
You essentially build like a mental statue.
Sorry, the 28th out.
Yeah, you essentially build a mental statue for all the sports fans out there to like put in your brain to immortalize that man forever. It was one of the greatest moments I've ever seen. Sounds like backed up by Nick over there. What's up?
Well, I was just going to say, and I know segueing to our next segment, you bring up Danny Costa to talk about Pernell Whitaker, and that's just the opposite. It's so sad that Pernell Whitaker died in the way he did now, being hit by a car, and we're not going to have that same remembrance. And you know what I mean?
It's just sort of, but I go back to what I said about Jose Fernandez and Doc Holliday. They had the accolades. That's the one thing about Pernell Whitaker.
And Pernell
is he's a 1984 Olympic gold medalist and one of the greatest boxers of his generation. And as I segue into that, Pernell Sweet Pete Whitaker lost last night, Sunday night in Virginia Beach. 55 years old, gone too soon, no question. But the legacy that man left on the sport of boxing is undeniable. And to talk about Pernell Sweet Pete Whitaker coming next here on the Mac Attack. You've heard him on Sirius XM. You've read him on ESPN and USA Today, and you've heard him here on the Mac Attack. It is Danny Acosta, and he's coming up next.
It's the Mac Attack with Ryan McKinnell on 920 The Game.
All right, last night in Virginia Beach, the boxing world and the sports world lost one of its more enigmatic figures, a man who we dubbed at the start of this show Floyd Mayweather before he was Floyd Mayweather. And why did I have to say that? Well, because when I put Pernell Whitaker in my Twitter search bar, because I wanted to put a GIF out, an animated video, if you will, right, of sorts. You put in Pernell Whitaker, you know what comes up? Forrest Whitaker. I'm not kidding. It's a page of Forrest Whitaker GIFs. That is so important because you can't let that legacy die, right? We lost Pernell Whitaker, but his legacy and what he meant to boxing would, or I say should and will, live forever. To talk about it, at least here on this Monday, one of my favorite people in combat sports. You've heard him on Sirius XM. You've read him on ESPN and USA Today. He is Danny Acosta. Danny, what's up, buddy?
Hey, I appreciate you having me, Big Mac. I wish it was under better circumstances, but every time you have me on your show, Las Vegas gets a little classier, a little more glamorous, a lot more glitz, and a little more sin. So thank you for having me today.
And more Mexican.
And more Mexican, yeah, absolutely. You know, couldn't love boxing if it wasn't for my heritage there.
There you go. Well, let's start with that because, Danny, I know this is a fight that was huge in your family's history, your childhood as well. It's I kind of talked about this with Sweet Pete Whitaker. I know he has four losses on his record, but in my mind, he only has two, and that really began the controversy because it came a little bit later. We'll get to Oscar De La Hoya here in a sec, which went down at the Thomas and Mac actually here in Las Vegas in April 97. But before that, 4 years before that was September 10th, 1993. And that was the mega fight between Julio Cesar Chavez and Sweet Pete Whitaker.
It was a mega fight. You know, to put it into today's context, imagine two of the best boxers in the world filling up Cowboy Stadium. It's not something you see every day. It's a very hard thing to do in modern boxing. And Pernell Whitaker, even though he was a U.S. Olympian in 1984, a gold medalist, You know, he didn't have that star power that Julio Sosa Chavez had. That was Julio Sosa Chavez as the A-side and Pernell Whitaker as this dangerous opponent that, you know, was a huge test for Chavez at the time. And after 12 rounds, I mean, really, I don't think there was a single soul in the building who thought Julio Sosa Chavez won that. Yeah, he was able to finagle a draw out of the Don King special. When you talk about Don King being a corrupt figure in boxing, this is one of those fights you could point to. So really took the win out of Pernell Whitaker Sales, a really disgusting robbery. And this is coming from, you know, a lifelong Julio Sosa Chavez fan. And I don't think anybody would tell you different, no matter how much of a fan they were of Julio Sosa Chavez. Pernell Whitaker, you know, people consider him this defensive wizard and this defensive genius, which he is, but he moved defensively in order to be in position to throw punches and land those punches. And he did that all over Julio Sosa Chavez back in 93.
What type of career, like what trajectory would it have been, do you think? I mean, he already had a great career. We're going to dissect more of it here in a second. But what do you think would have changed if had he have gotten that Chavez win, as he should have, as we all agree? Like you said, everyone in attendance, most boxing writers and scribes, yourself. I went back and watched it probably 3 or 4 years ago. I mean, it's almost inexplicable that he didn't get that win.
Oh, it's absolutely inexplicable. It's one of the dirtiest things that happened in boxing. It's why Don King is such a horrible name that I hate to speak out of my own mouth. But, you know, Pernell Whitaker, I don't think it's the fact that he didn't get the decision that night that hurt his career. I think it's the fact that he didn't get a rematch. You know, when you talk about how crooked boxing runs, it's usually, oh, well, you know, they're just trying to set up the rematch. Pernell Whitaker did not get the rematch. I think that's what really hurt his career, being able to get it there and settle with Chavez again and, you know, probably get Chavez out of there before the 12 rounds. I mean, look, Julio Sosa Chavez lost to Frankie Randall. Frankie Randall does not hold up to the test of time in history. If you were going to let Julio Sosa Chavez lose to anyone, it should have been in Pernell Whitaker, whether it was that night and he actually earned the decision and he gave him the decision he earned, or in a rematch, you know, for a big money fight after the fact.
All right, so let's jump ahead to a fight that I think is a little less controversial. I still think Sweet Pea probably won it, but it was essentially, as I mentioned, I mean, at this point, I'm looking at an undefeated Pernell Whitaker. I know that he had a loss in his career, another split decision to Jose Luis Ramirez, which, again, was another robbery. The De La Hoya fight, it was a unanimous decision, Danny. No matter how you look at it, it was a massive, massive fight. There are numerous, you've seen the clips shared today of just Pernell absolutely schooling Oscar. What was difficult about that fight is, yes, if you're a Pernell fan, he lost the fight, but it really signaled, Danny, the downward spiral of the end of his career.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't, I think, an obvious downward spiral. He was good all the way to the end, and of course, you know, there's an argument that he won that fight. In fact, Freddie Roach told Fight Hub TV this morning that he thought Pernell Whitaker was one of the greatest of all time, and that he beat Oscar De La Hoya, not just Julio Sosa Chavez. So, you know, take it from the Hall of Fame trainer. But Pernell Whitaker really, really did a number on Oscar De La Hoya. Yeah. You know, Oscar was frustrated. I think it was just the volume of jabs that allowed Oscar to get that decision. You know, I did not think he won that fight, but there's no point in arguing now.
Right.
I definitely think that the drugs and the partying of Pernell Whitaker kind of took over that latter part of his career. So after the Oscar De La Hoya fight, I think he knew, hey, I just had the two biggest fighters available to me, the two biggest names, and I wasn't able to get over that hump. I think that drug game that he was involved with kind of accelerated after the fact, and then he wasn't able to perform in the ring, you know, as he would have.
Yeah, and we're here with Danny Acosta. Danny, I guess I'll ask you this, you know, how are you going to remember Pernell? I mean, I know details are scarce as far as last night goes. We know we lose Pernell Whitaker at 55 years old in Virginia Beach. He was hit by a car. The driver stayed around afterwards to talk to police, so it doesn't seem like anything nefarious happened. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to speak on it. I haven't read the latest details, but going back to his drug addiction, to his cocaine addiction, the falling off of his career, and Danny, we covered it, you know, 1984 Olympic gold medalist, one of the best boxers of his generation, beat Chavez Jr., beat De La Hoya. Okay, he didn't, but he should have, right? How are you going to remember Pernell? Is it going to be a career of talent unfulfilled, cut short, or will you remember him like a lot of people remember him, which is one of the greatest boxers of a generation?
Yeah, no, I absolutely remember him. He's not just one of the greatest boxers of his generation, but one of the greatest fighters of all time. You know, I don't like the qualifier of saying he's one of the greatest defensive fighters of all time. He absolutely is that. That is not incorrect to say, but he is one of the greatest fighters of all time. You know, prior to the Julio Cesar Chavez fight, you know, he had two great fights with James Buddy McGurk, who's now a, you know, really solid trainer in his own right. But
sure.
McGurk is a Hall of Famer. In 2006, first ballot Hall of Famer Pernell Whitaker got in there. You know, he had, I believe, 8 title defenses at lightweight and 6 at welterweight, or the inverse of that. I'm mixing my numbers up. But when it comes to the greatest names in boxing, you talk about Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Tommy Hearns. Those are guys that Pernell Whitaker is right there with in terms of he was one of the only 4 people to ever unify the titles down there, jumping up in weight classes, across 4 weight classes. So he's a 4-division champion, a Hall of Famer. Just because he didn't get those signature huge name wins over Oscar De La Hoya and over Julio Cesar Chavez, which, of course, we all know looking at the footage, you can make the argument that he won or he absolutely did win. I think his legacy is solid. I think it's intact. But, yeah, it should not be lost to time because all the way till the end, you know, he was game against Felix Trinidad in his second-to-last fight. You know, he came back and he had an unfortunate fight for his last fight of his career where he was stopped a clavicle injury. So he never really had a decline that we saw in the ring, you know, like his Olympic counterpart in Meldrick Taylor. So he never tarnished his legacy inside the ropes. Yeah, he had some controversy outside of it. There was a lot of politics, obviously, with Don King screwing him out of that Chavez win. But Pernell Whitaker absolutely should be considered one of the greatest of all time.
Well said, Danny Acosta. That's why we love you here so much on the Mac Attack. Hey, let's pivot a little bit from Pernell Whitaker because coming up here in Vegas, I believe, yeah, it's this weekend.
Yeah, this Saturday.
I'm just making sure, just getting my notes correct. Listen, Danny, we know this in the fight world, the way that fights come and go, not only in mixed martial arts, but in boxing, it is getting ramped up. And the good news is with this fight, and I'm about to get to it, Manny Pacquiao taking on Keith Thurman, it is back in Las Vegas because, listen, man, you know it with the DAZN deal, D-A-Z-N, a lot of these fights are going over to the East Coast. But, you know, the bigger fights, you know, obviously Canelo's still fighting here, and you know, we still get some of the biggest fights. This Thurman versus Pacquiao fight, Danny, it's exciting for a few different reasons. One, it's exciting because you're getting a look at the future in a lot of regards to Keith Thurman, but you're also getting a look at a 40-year-old Manny Pacquiao. And Danny, I've talked to a lot of experts about this fight, and I've heard more than a few that are going with Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. There's kind of a perfect storm for this. I mean, if you were to say at any point that a 40-year-old Manny Pacquiao would be, you know, looking good in position against a young gun like Thurman, who is a heavy hitter, knows how to use his legs, knows how to move around the ring, really good, credible wins on Keith Thurman's record. Manny Pacquiao lost to Jeff Horn. Manny Pacquiao got put out to pasture by Bob Arum. You know, Manny Pacquiao has been fighting weird fights in Macau and not necessarily top of the boxing world, but where they are now at this point in time actually makes sense for them to meet. It's a big name for Thurman, the biggest name he's ever had. And for Pacquiao, I mean, he really does look like his older self, which is kind of amazing to think of. And so with Thurman kind of getting rocked by Joselito Lopez in a comeback fight after injuries and not looking that good, and the fact that Pacquiao kind of looks like he's on the up again, which is incredible to say considering how long he's been around, man, it is a fight that I am really excited to see, and I would say it's a 51-49 fight based on who you're rooting for.
Well, Danny, you're not wrong. That is pretty much exactly what we have it here in Vegas. It's pretty much an even fight in most places. Actually, Thurman is the underdog, which, Danny, I'm not going to look at the Joselito Lopez fight. Like, I'm not going to look at the decline from Thurman. I know he's been inactive, but I just refuse to believe that a 40-year-old Manny Pacquiao can beat a prime Keith Thurman. I'm having a real time reconciling with that. I really am.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, you could have stopped that Joselito Lopez fight,
yeah,
and Keith Thurman wouldn't be in this position. He would not be the champion.
Yeah, you're right.
So I understand that. At the same time, you know, Pacquiao, he hasn't had, you know, the incredible win, you know, Broner, Matisse, like these fighters that he's knocking off, Rios and whatnot. And then, you know, of course, you have that big operation with Horn. And the Horn fight was 2 years ago. So, you know, you're aging from 38 to 40 in the fight game. It's not a good thing. So I'm not saying that Pacquiao has great steam in this, but Pacquiao is better than Joselito Lopez on his worst day.
Well, there you go. So let me,
really what it breaks down to. Joselito Lopez, he made the best of an opportunity. He came out and he knocked Keith Thurman around. It was very, very impressive. But Pacquiao, for as diminishing as he might be, always has that level of mystique of being Pacquiao, of being a sixth division champion, and having all those names on his record that he does.
Danny, I can't believe I'm asking this because we are years removed from it, and I thought it was too late when it happened. But I really think if Pacquiao wins this fight on Saturday, Floyd Mayweather's waiting in the wings, and I still think Floyd wants to fight again. I know Manny wants the money. It if he beats Thurman, his stock, I mean, dude, his stock would arguably be higher in the rematch than it was the first time. Like, could this happen?
I mean, you're not wrong. Coming off a win against Keith Thurman is way better than coming off a win against Chris Algieri, like he was when he fought Mayweather. So you'd be right. And then obviously Floyd Mayweather is coming off that highly visible Conor McGregor fight, even if it was a sham of all shams. So I could see your point. I would agree with that. Keith Thurman should not lose his fight.
No, he shouldn't.
In any regard, it doesn't matter what the rosemakers say or anybody says. Keith Thurman should absolutely put a drubbing on Manny Pacquiao and end Pacquiao's career. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about it being a pretty even fight.
Yeah, well, speaking of old dudes going out and getting W's, we'll see what happens with Pacquiao and Thurman on Saturday night. You'll hear more about it on the Mac Attack as the week goes along. I do want to follow up on that since it is this week. I will say this. Old men are kind of in the news. Uriah Faber on Saturday night went out and did what I was talking about, the unthinkable, and talk about the improbable. Danny Acosta, at 40 years old, Uriah Faber, spending about 3 years away from the sport of mixed martial arts, went out in the UFC and took out Ricky Simone, who is not a bad fighter. Danny is a pretty damn good fighter. And not only did that, Uriah Faber got his first knockout since 2007. I mean, there are comebacks, there are returns to sports. And then there is what we saw on Saturday with Uriah Faber. He said Henry Cejudo, he's thrown his name out there. Cejudo is presumably, you know, above his status, but not in terms of name value, Danny. Uriah Faber is a name. What lies next for Faber, and how impressed were you with his performance on Saturday night?
I was incredibly impressed. Uriah Faber hasn't had a knockout since the WEC. You're talking about an organization that doesn't exist anymore. You're talking about Uriah Faber as a prime fighter, probably in his late 20s, early 30s, the last time he got a knockout. He goes out there and gets a win in his hometown. In under a minute with a nice little overhand, right? You know, the Dominic Cruz would mock Uriah Faber and Team Alpha Male. All they are is overhand rights and guillotines. There's still some gas left at the overhand right, apparently. Uriah Faber is going out there and showing at the Golden West Center in Sacramento. So, man, I would have to say that he's probably well-positioned to get a fight with Henry Cejudo at 135 pounds. I know that's ridiculous, but the UFC is a ridiculous enterprise. So I think in terms of lifetime achievements, you know, Uriah Faber could always notch a title shot, but at the same time, Uriah Faber has had endless amounts of title shots. Does beating a guy like Ricky Simone warrant that when Henry Cejudo is a champ and has hungry, hardcore contenders like Aljamain Sterling, you know, guys at 125 as well? I mean, there's a lot going into that.
How about
I don't know, but UFC will skip that line for Uriah Faber.
Yeah, Danny, how about a friend of the show and a guy you know very well, Joseph Benavidez, the last man to beat Henry Cejudo?
Oh, absolutely. And could you imagine the bad blood for Joseph Benavidez? A very casual, relaxed guy, even keel, but if Uriah Faber comes out and knocks out some guy after 3 years away, while Benavidez has been in there taking on everybody and anybody, winning, having the win over Henry Cejudo. Could you imagine if he gets passed up? It hurts. It turns my stomach to think Joseph Benavidez has to sit there and consider Uriah Faber might pass him up for that title shot.
And you know he would do it, too, and he would probably do it quietly because Uriah is his mentor and his coach.
Yeah, but he's been gone from Team Alpha Male for a long time. I don't know if that'll still hold up when Benavidez is, basically trying to angle for that one last run.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point, man. So much drama. Let me ask you this before we get you out of here as we talk about Faber versus Cejudo. Do you think Faber, I mean, as we talk about it, styles make fights, man. I mean, Faber's been in there with the best in the world. He's seen everything. What type of chance do you think Faber would stand against a Cejudo?
Less than 10%.
What?
I would not give your eye Faber any kind of high-level credibility when it comes to a title shot at this moment. No disrespect to your eye Faber. He's a legend of the game. He is the first Hall of Famer in the UFC to have a win after being inducted in the Hall of Fame. He's one of the nicest guys in the sport. I cannot say enough good things about your eye Faber, but when it comes to a guy like Henry Cejudo, who's an Olympic-level athlete, who is the champ, who has power in his hands, who has better wrestling on paper, and when it comes to mixed martial arts, I just can't give your eye Faber a chance squaring up that fight.
All right, buddy. We'll leave you on that heat. You want the smoke? Danny Acosta's got it. You can find him on Twitter, at Acosta's Legend. Danny, we'll be hearing from you in the future, man. We appreciate a few minutes.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
All right, buddy. That is Danny Acosta. Heard him on Sirius, read him on ESPN, read him on USA Today, and you can follow him at Twitter, as I mentioned, at Acosta's Legend. All right, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, well, you remember Bagel Man, Bagel Boss, Lil Chris? You may know him by a bunch of different names. We talked about him last week, that sub-5-foot guy that started a fight in that bagel shop on the East Coast. Well, he's kind of becoming famous, and we're all to blame for it. Yeah, back here on the Mac Attack. Thanks to Bananarama for that great rejoin. I told you, every day, every single day that it's over 105 degrees, we're hitting that cruel summer here on the Mac Attack. Oh, this is a jam. You know, they did a remix for it for the new Karate Kid series on YouTube. Some like techno group did a.
I was going to have slower. To have like more of a.
No, it's slow. It's super slow.
Slower than this.
Yeah. It's like, oh, yeah. This ain't slow. This is upbeat.
Well.
All right. I mean, that's the problem with this. Doing this every day that it's over 105 degrees, you're going to have to stop me from jamming out. No, this is my jam.
I know you're going.
This is like my Enter Sandman. You
I'll
can
just
play
have to actually
10,000 times.
Your what? Oh,
this
yeah.
This is my Enter Sandman.
I used to be able to play it on the guitar. Just a little bit. I'll have to actually make a rejoiner for this.
Pretty kick-ass video. Oh. Not enough of those. What do you think that is? What is that? Like one of those xylophones?
Xylophones.
Yeah. Not enough xylophones being used in the millennium. Shout out Chris Martin. Lil Chris.
Morgan.
Morgan?
Chris Morgan.
Thought it was Chris Morton.
Morgan.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, turns out you're right. I actually probably shouldn't get his name right.
He's an angry little man, or is he?
And that is the question. So it is Chris Morgan. I'll just call him Morton and see if we get him on the show and get him pissed off at us.
Morton Anderson.
Apparently he's doing appearances. We're talking about Bagel Boss. Bagel Boss Man, Bagel Man, Bagel Man, Lil Chris. I don't know what you call him.
The Woman Hater.
The Woman Hater, He-Man Woman Haters Club.
Right.
Whatever it was, She-Man, whatever.
From
Alfalfa.
Yeah.
Little Rascals.
Little Rascals.
Yeah. Well, he's doing appearances. My pal Luke Thomas, colleague of mine over at SiriusXM Fight Nation, Channel 156, hosts the Luke Thomas Show. He had him on today. Now, I didn't get to listen. Cofield was tweeting about it because Cofield's got a real serious obsession with Chris. Lil Chris. Apparently things didn't go too well. I know Luke. I'm not really sure how this guy ended up on his show. I'm pretty sure Luke wasn't having any of it because, listen, if this is what we said last week. Once we found out he had a YouTube and there were other videos, my concern immediately shifted from, okay. Like, I get it, man. Life's hard. You want to make a living. And people are stupid and you want to make an easy living. I guess I'm stupid too because we've been talking about you and giving you free press. Now, it's not my fault it went viral. The thing went viral. When things go viral, I feel like on some level we have an obligation to talk about it. These are the happenings of the world, Nick.
The video is hilarious.
Oh, it was great. I mean, aside from the fact that he was like accosting innocent civilians in a public place and like squaring up to women. Like, you step to a woman and you're like, what are you going to do? It's like, I'm going to break your face. That's what I'm going to do.
But you called it. The best part was she's like, oh my God, I just wanted bagels.
Right. I mean, you're legitimately like making people's lives uncomfortable. So he's doing appearances on, well, SiriusXM with my pal Luke Thomas. But now he's got a Twitter. I'm not handing out the Twitter, but he's got a Twitter. Now he's selling T-shirts. You're not God or my father.
Or
which
my
was
boss.
Which was a great line. So who's to blame here, Nick? Are we to blame for pumping him up and not seeing it, or is no one to blame? I mean, is he a winner? Is he a genius?
Well, that's unfortunately who's to blame is the social media, and we're to blame if we buy his crap.
Right. But we kind of bought his crap. We're kind of talking about him.
No, we're not buying his stuff.
We're just reporting?
Yes.
We're just doing our due diligence. All right, listen. Lil Chris will not end on this show. We will be keeping up with him. We'll be back tomorrow, 24 hours. It's a back attack! Money just said that I'm rich.